I'm going to be looking at Exodus 28 through 11 this morning. I want to begin by reading this passage. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. You know, the word work is probably one of the more unpopular words in the English language. Discipline is right up there with it, but discipline's usually temporary. Discipline may be extremely unpleasant, but it's soon over. But work just goes on and on and on forever with no relief. Last summer, we were in one of these heat spells like we've been in recently here. Hot, humid, and we had to replace the water supply line running from the front sidewalk to our house. So we hired a plumbing company to do the job. The owner decided to have his crew dig the trench by hand with shovels and pickaxes rather than to use a trenching machine. He was doing that in order to save, I think, some of our plants, a little decorative tree we had there in the yard, which is very nice of him from our standpoint, but his crew didn't think it was all that nice. There were four men that were out there with shovels and pickaxes. They were not young, especially young men. They were large, somewhat overweight men in their 30s and 40s, and they were out there for 3 days in the heat and humidity, digging a 3.5-4 foot deep trench in that compacted dirt that we get here, almost like clay. They got ample breaks, all the cold, clean water they wanted, but I have to say it was a little uncomfortable for me stepping out of my air-conditioned car and walking by them in my khakis and going into my air-conditioned house, enough so that I quit parking up in the front and moved back toward the back so I wouldn't have to walk by them. These were hard-working guys. And you know, work like that, I had my share when I was a teenager, I think. Work like that can be very repressive. So getting a day off to rest and recuperate is more than a convenience. I know there are doctrinal problems with bringing the Sabbath laws over into the New Testament church, but a few years ago, very few people worked on Sunday. None of the stores were open on that day. In those days, most people ate at home, especially on Sunday, so only a few cafes would be open. That was about all the work that was allowed on Sunday. And the word workaholic was only used in the big cities where pagans who didn't know about the Bible worked 7 days a week. The children of Israel had been overburdened by working as slaves in Egypt. And one of the stated purposes behind the fourth of the Ten Commandments is to keep life from being constant, harsh toil, especially for those whose schedule was controlled by someone else. Deuteronomy 5:13 through 15 says about the Sabbath, "On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor the alien within your gates, so that your manservant and maidservant may rest as you do. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to observe the Sabbath day." The children of Israel knew what it was like to be slaves of people who did not observe a day of rest and did not allow them to observe a day of rest. Exodus 1:11 and following says, "So they, the Egyptians, put slave masters over them to oppress them with forced labor and worked them ruthlessly. They made their lives bitter with hard labor and brick and mortar and with all kinds of work in the fields. In all their labor, the Egyptians used them ruthlessly." Exodus 3:7, when God called Moses through the burning bush, notice what he said. "I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue." But when Moses asked Pharaoh for relief, Pharaoh just increased the burdens. Exodus 5, verse 6 and following, we read, "That same day, Pharaoh gave this order to the slave drivers and foremen in charge of the people. You are no longer to supply the people with straw for making bricks. Let them go and gather their own straw. But require them to make the same number of bricks as before. Don't let them reduce the quota. They are lazy. That's why they're crying out, 'Let us go and sacrifice to our God.' Make the work harder for the men." So verse 12 says, "The people scattered all over Egypt to gather stubble to use for straw. The slave drivers kept pressing them, saying, 'Complete the work required of you for each day, just as when you had straw.' The Israelite foremen appointed by Pharaoh's slave drivers were beaten and were asked, 'Why didn't you meet your quota of bricks yesterday or today as before?'" And God was displeased that people were being required to work hard every day, and his rescue of his people was propelled by his displeasure. The day of rest was intended especially to protect those whose time was not their own. It gave slaves a chance for some fulfillment and happiness, for a life, for relating to each other, for doing something besides working hard in the hot sun all day long, every single day. You may have heard some of the spirituals the slaves in our country sang. The refrain of one of those songs said that heaven would be like Sunday. Every day will be Sunday by and by. I have difficulty, personally, even imagining what it would be like to be a slave, especially one who had to work 7 days a week. God never intended for that to happen. Even Israel's animals were to be given a day of rest. God said, "You shall not do any work, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals." Even animals need a day of rest. That can be seen from what happens to animals that have to work 7 days a week. Clovis Chapel tells about two men who ran mountain resorts. Each of the men had donkeys, which tourists rode up the mountain to see the view. One man's donkeys looked well kept, but the other group was lean and weary, had no seeming interest in life. One man sent his donkeys up the mountain 7 days a week. The other refused to work his more than 6 days. And the difference in their appearance indicated that even a donkey knows that 1 day in seven should be used as a day of rest. It isn't good for our physical bodies to work every single day. Those who train athletes advise that the body be given complete rest at least 1 day a week. Maximum physical conditioning cannot be achieved through working out a maximum number of hours, but by a combination of exercise and rest. So how should we, you and I, today, 2016, Louisville, Kentucky, how should we respond to this information? You know, some respond in some church communities by binding rest on people in a way that is not unlike the slavery the Sabbath was intended to eliminate. That's what the Jews had done with the Sabbath laws in the first century. They had gotten extremely particular in every aspect of life, defining what work was and what work wasn't. And you couldn't break all these little, seemingly to us, minutia laws. For example, if a man's ox fell into a ditch on the Sabbath day, he could get it out. But if the man himself fell in the ditch, he had to stay there. If a person took a sip of vinegar for food, that was okay. But if he took the same amount of vinegar in order to help an aching tooth, he or she had broken the Sabbath. This is ridiculous. This is written. It's real. If a person was bitten by a flea, they were compelled to permit the little pest to keep on with this annoying work and not kill it or track it down, because that would make them guilty of the sin of hunting on the Sabbath day. Followers of Christ have often been just as guilty of making rest a burden as the Jews were. And some have taken the extreme position that the best way to spend the day of rest was to lie in exactly the same position for 24 straight hours. The Puritans fell into the same error. There's a story, early American history, a certain sea captain was at sea for 2 years. He came back and he met his wife at the gate and caught her up in his arms and kissed her and was put in stocks because you weren't allowed to kiss on the Sabbath day. It's possible by such regulations to make the day of rest a day of ugliness and horror. On the other hand, most of us are more likely to make our one day of rest, or 2 days of rest in some cases, so filled with activities that it's Monday that's the day of ugliness and horror. That's what Monday morning feels like to a world that spent Sunday trying to stuff down enough exercise, sunburn, TV watching, athletic contests, religion, amusement, and food to last for an entire week. We can't say that the Sabbath laws from the Old Testament should simply be shifted over to Sunday and then kept. On the other hand, unless we all learn to impose some restrictions on ourselves, we will find ourselves spending less and less time resting our bodies, minds, and spirits. And we'll go back to work on Monday physically, emotionally, and spiritually exhausted. The Bible gives another reason for remembering the Sabbath. Exodus 20, verse 11. For 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them. But he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. He set it apart. He made it different from all the other days. And since there's no chance that Almighty God actually became tired, it's clear that God rested for the benefit of his creatures and not for his own benefit. God knows that in order for a person to be fully human, he or she must discipline themselves to rest. And in order for people to nurture their souls and feed their spirits, they must set aside some time to nurture their souls and feed their spirits. Clovis Chapel once said, to worship aright, we need a bit of time, a bit of leisure. And I don't think God had in mind just an hour on Sunday morning for that. It should be a more important part of our life. Life is extended and improved by rest and worship. People need a time to reflect. You know, I don't work hard in physical labor. You may be able to see that on me. And most of you don't. But we work, and we work hard. And it leaves us stressed and emotionally and physically exhausted. We all need to rest. Life is extended and improved by rest and worship. And we need reflection. We need time to think about who we are and where we're going and about our relationship with God, about spiritual things. Time away from the computer and the television and all the other stuff that we fill our days with. Newsweek reported a study on aging in which 73 residents in retirement homes were randomly assigned to one of three groups. And they're in retirement homes. And yet one of the groups was assigned to practice meditation, one relaxation, and one was just a control group that was given no special activity. Very small study, but still, the meditation group showed the greatest improvement in blood pressure. People who spent time meditating on important things. I don't know if it was their Bibles or what it was, but in meditation, they showed improvement in blood pressure, memory, and survival. The average age of the residents that entered the study was 81 years old. At the end of a 3-year study, everyone in the meditation group was still alive. 12.5% of the relaxation group had died, and 37.5% of the control group had died. Now, we can say what we want, but as human beings, as God creatures, we need rest, relaxation, and reflection in order to survive. People seem to need some leisure in order to be creative. Most of us are living in a pressure cooker of our own choosing. What would it be like if on Sunday afternoons for about 3 or 4 hours, all phones, computers, televisions, and machinery of every kind, including cars, was all just turned off? And we had about 4 hours of none of that. What would that be like? I don't know, people would go through withdrawal. It'd be very difficult. But how much more rested would we be? I don't think it would be long until we'd actually be having conversations with our families and maybe even discussing the Bible and composing poems, songs about the God who made us and gave himself for us. Now, I think back, and as I read about church history and think about the Restoration Movement in the 1800s. All of the time and thought and study that those people did, they spent hours, they would sit on their front porches in the evenings because, you know, what else do you do when there's no lights? They would go out on their front porches in the evening where there was a little bit of light, and they would sit and talk and study and debate and work through things. They had deeper lives than we do in the early 1800s because they didn't have all the distractions that we do. That point is made plain by the fact that when God was providing manna for the Israelites in the wilderness, he gave them extra manna on Friday, and they were together twice as much as usual, so they would not have to do any gathering on the Sabbath. But Exodus 16:27 is not surprising at all. Nevertheless, some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather it, but they found none. God made sure they didn't find any, no matter how hard they searched. For the Jew, keeping the Sabbath was a way of making the statement that life does not depend on our own feverish activity of self-preservation. It's an interruption of our effort to realize that God is the one who provides for us. And in the same way, God specifically told the Israelites that they were not to work on the Sabbath in seasons of the year when work seemed most essential. Now, if you've ever lived in farming country, listen to these words. It's amazing. Exodus 34:21. 6 days you shall labor, but on the seventh day you shall rest, even during the plowing season and harvest, you must rest. Moved here from Panhandle of Texas. It was big wheat country. And the harvest, it was a huge deal because at any moment, this crop you had worked on for months, put so much time, effort, and money into, at any moment, a thunderstorm could pop up and the hail would destroy your crop in an instant. And so it was time to harvest the wheat. And they would run those combines 24 hours a day. And the grain carts and the combines and the grain trucks and the grain elevators would all be open. The lights would be on. And they'd run them because you got to get that harvest in. But there were some Christians in our church. On Sunday morning, 6 a.m., it shut down. And they didn't turn their harvester back on until Monday morning at 6 a.m. And they might lose their crop to a storm or some other calamity, but they shut it down because they believed it's what God wanted them to do. And they trusted that somehow, some way, God would make it okay. And there's so much about that. I mean, if he were speaking to us today about taking a day of rest, he would say, even during the tax season, even when your company is rebidding its contract, even when the inspectors are coming, even when you have a term paper due, stop. Remember me. Spend some time refreshing your spirit and your soul. And that's not encouraging laziness at all. It requires pre-planning. It sometimes involves redoubling our efforts on Friday or even on Saturday so that our responsibilities can be met, but the day of rest can be maintained. The German scholar von Rad contends that this commandment, like the first three, is really dealing with the issue of idolatry. He has this work called God at Work, and he says in it, he says, the fact is that thousands of things occupy a person in life. Claims are made upon him from every side, and commitments bind him. In every one of these obligations, especially in a man's work, wherever it is taken seriously, there abides an almost demonic power. It wills to be the only lord of a person's life, and thus with frightful ease becomes an idol. Human work, of course, never ends. It knows no conclusion, requires continual perfecting, and so it levies an exclusive claim of lordship on a person. And precisely this is what God crosses out. Neither the dignity nor the seriousness of work is touched. Only this exclusive claim to lordship. Week after week, a man is to set aside one day and thereby raise a signal that his work is not his or her ultimate concern. And then he concludes with this searching question. Is not this command a way to be serious about the command, you shall have no other gods before me? One way to understand the blessings of rest in a culture that doesn't much appreciate it is to approach it indirectly, like Jesus often did in his teaching. For example, some of Jesus' most famous beatitudes are paradoxical. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you. Why the paradox? A.N. Wilson put it this way. He said, if the world itself is inverted, then the only way to see it clearly is upside down. If the values of the world are wrong way round, then the only way to wisdom is to stand those values on their head. Daryl Tippins, in his work Pilgrim Heart, suggests some new beatitudes that Jesus might preach to our culture today. The first, he says, would be, happy are those who serve the world by abandoning it for a little while. Blessed are those who disappear for a while in order to be fully present. Blessed are those who enter silence, for they will hear God. Time set apart for silence, reflection, prayer, and worship can change our understanding of our mission and relationship to our world. It can help us serve people better. Retreat renews. His second suggested beatitude is, happy are those who rest, for they will get their work done. You know, it's interesting the way the Jewish calendar worked. The days began in the evening, 6 p.m. So in other words, the first order of business for every day that began in the evening and continued through the next day, the first order of business is to rest, and then you're ready for the next day. Henry Nouwen often made the point that there are three movements to the spiritual life, three movements. The first movement is solitude. The second movement is community. And the third movement is service. And I think that's really wise. Think about Jesus in Luke 6, 12 through 19. You remember, he goes up and he spends the night in prayer on the mountain. Solitude. And then he comes down and he invites certain men to be his disciples. He forms a community. And then he takes those men and he goes out and he serves. Solitude, community, service. I think a lot of Christians start with the second step. Community and service. And they're exhausted and empty, and they are not refreshed. They feel worn out because they didn't start with the first step, the first movement, solitude. And then another, the final suggested beatitude from Daryl Tippins is this one. Happy are the playful, for they will be serious achievers. You know, God made us playful creatures. Just look around. And it's not just people, animals. We're just playful by nature. Every child plays. That's something that really strikes me. I mean, I go into a hospital, see a kid who's terribly sick, laying in the bed, whatever, and what are they doing? They're playing. It's a part of our nature, and we never need to stop. Happy are the playful, for they will be serious achievers. We are so much better off when we are not operating in stress. When we're operating with a lack of anxiety, a lack of worry, when we're working out of confidence and refreshment, we're serious achievers when we're in that place. I want to conclude this morning with a couple of passages that I know are important to you. Think about them in this context. Psalm 23, maybe the most famous passage in all the Bible, and most beloved. Listen to what it says in verse 2 and 3. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. Is that your relationship with God? That's what he can do for you. Or what Jesus said in Matthew 11, verse 28. Come to me, all you who are weary and carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. I will give you rest. If you're subject to the call of Christ this morning, we encourage you to come as we stand and sing.